Yeah, just trying to get on a moving train that's moving 60 miles an hour and you don't know where the train's going. Any questions about our process? If not, we're moving. This morning, I'll let you know you can anticipate snacks at 12:30. So, for roughly 45, 50 minutes, some thoughts and then some questions. And if there's no questions, then it's early snacks. I wanted to spend some time with a few thoughts. One, self-honesty requires having a spiritual conception. Or, you know, the real thing is devoid of material coverings. So, an example is morality and ethics in Bhagavad Gita is a classic. Arjuna, in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, chapter 1 and first parts of chapter 2, he gives 6 reasons, ethical reasons, distinct ethical reasons, why it's the right thing to do to not fight. And he gives, I'm not going to list them, he gives his reasons. And he has enough self-honesty to recognize, although I've got all these good reasons, I really don't know what I should do. And so he submits himself to Krishna and says, please instruct me, what should I do? And what Krishna says is, paraphrased, you get an A for your ideas of ethics, but you get an F for your sense of self. Because the self is something other than what you're thinking. The self is not the covering. The self is the spirit soul. So then he gives a basic lesson in the soul and the coverings of the soul, what the soul is and what the soul isn't. Because without having a sense of self, how can you have self-honesty? How can you have a real sense, a proper sense of ethics without a proper sense of self? Like, you know, what is my duty? Well, before you speak about what is my duty, then who are you? Then we can talk about your duty. So, a spiritual conception of self. I could give a couple other examples, but to save time, I won't. we'll do one more. Humility. So, or a nice one from Sri Ishopanishad, excuse me, Nectar of Instruction is enthusiasm. In order to be successful in spiritual and anything, material life even, you have to be enthusiastic. So, enthusiastic, to sustain enthusiasm, you have to have a spiritual conception, because otherwise, enthusiasm will depend upon circumstance. And circumstance doesn't create spirit. Consciousness creates circumstance. Now, the configuration of matter is determined by consciousness. And then Krishna makes arrangements according to consciousness for what type of things we're exposed to. Or, anyway. So let's say we're trying to be enthusiastic. Like somebody was asking a question the other day about Jai Jagannath. Being enthusiastic to practice devotional service, and you have this idea that when I chant in devotional service, I'm going to feel something. And lo and behold, that expectation isn't met, so then I lose my enthusiasm. Or something like that. So, to be enthusiastic that's based on circumstance, that's nice. But that's not what the essence of enthusiasm is. It's not circumstantially based, it's on the platform of the soul. On the platform of the soul, if one's enthusiastic, it doesn't matter. We're using this metaphor, the hills and valleys of chanting. It doesn't matter whether you're on the hill or you're down in a valley. Enthusiasm comes from the soul. Or it's like Haridas Thakur said, when the Kazi said, you know, Haridas, do yourself a favor. Don't chant this name of the Hindu god. You're a religious man. Just be a religious man according to Muslim teaching, and everything will be all right. No one will harm you. But if you don't, as the Qazi, I'm going to have to administer some punishment. So, because the enthusiasm for Haridas Thakur was on the platform of the soul, he gave a very interesting answer. He said, my dear Qazi, you're the king. It's your duty to administer reward and punishment. So, it's your right. Whatever you feel is right, you can do that. I suggest that if I've done something wrong, then the appropriate punishment would be for someone who is Hindu and who becomes Muslim. If your objection is, I was Muslim and became Hindu, because, you know, I was born something and changed, that's not right, then same punishment should be one who's born Hindu becomes Muslim, because they're born and they changed. That's fair. Whatever punishment you would give them, that's what you should give me. But if you decide otherwise, you're the king, you're entitled to do otherwise. But I'll tell you one thing, if you decide the punishment is I should be killed, and if you decide the killing is you should cut my body into little pieces, I still won't stop chanting, because it's not coming from the body, it's coming from the soul. My chanting will go on. I can't help but chant, because it's springing from the platform of the soul. That's circumstantial. In fact, Haridas Thakur was chanting Krishna's name. Even he was born in a Muslim family before anybody was chanting Krishna's name. He was chanting Krishna's name, because it was coming from the soul. So, other examples, but the point is, to have self-honesty, there has to be a conception of self that's spiritually based. To sustain enthusiasm, to be Krishna conscious, go back and say, just to be self-honest. You have to have a spiritual conception of self. Now, that's challenging, because who does that? Who even has a spiritual conception to work with, what to speak of, maintain it in life? So, okay. Gallup poll, in the year 2000, asked the question, how many people believe in the soul? You want to guess how many people in the year 2000? Because it was, you know, Y2K, it was a centennial type of survey. Of the Americans who said they believe in the soul, something like 87% of the Americans interviewed believe in the soul. And of those who believe in an afterlife, you know, soul after the body's finished, it was around the same percentage. Slightly less. You know, I don't know how they could have an idea. If there's a soul, the soul's not eternal. When the body's finished, what happens to the soul if the soul's eternal? But something close to between 85 and 90% of Americans believe in the existence of the soul. But how many people live their life that way? You know, put their money where their mouth is, as the saying goes, or put their life's action where their convictions are, how many people live their life as if they're a spirit soul? I don't know too many people that do that. So self-honesty requires a spiritual conception, but it also, it's challenged, even, you know, theoretical conception of the soul. Even if you got it, you know, you read Bhagavad Gita a bunch of times. You got it down. You know what it says in Bhagavad Gita, what the soul is. It's still challenging because we have all these conflicting currents of conceptions and how people live and so on. I mentioned last time we were together, we have a little Venn diagram. Sure enough, there it is. Turning towards one's real self. This is from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. We're going to hang out with Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur for a little bit this morning and this afternoon, because he's real clear, and we need to become real clear. I'll read a little bit. This is from Brahma Samhita, text 61. Fantastic. One of my favorite purports in the whole book. And the language that he's using is the practice of looking inward, turning towards one's real self. And he describes the bhakti process. The verse is Lord Brahma, who has become fully self-realized, he's realized, not just chanted the Brahma Samhita, he realized the Brahma Samhita, those verses, those wonderful prayers, Govindam Adipurusham Tamaham Bhajami, he composed them. And even Lord Brahma, but to speak of ourselves, has a doubt, or he sees a challenge that he's not sure he's going to be able to overcome, even with that realization. And that the challenge is, I have this urge to do something. In his case, it's to create a universe. In our case, it's whatever it is. I want to fill in the blank. I want to go to school. I want to get a degree. I want to get a job. I want something. Lord Brahma says, the people of this world act ceaselessly in pursuance of some ideal. Everybody has some ideal. And in pursuance of that ideal, they act. So, what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, as long as you act, you're bound to the result of your action. Try not acting. You can't. Because souls are active. You're going to act. And on what basis? Some ideal. And you pursue the ideal and you act. So, Krishna's advice, this text 61, is Lord Vishnu's response. It's another version of Sarva Dharmam Prityaja Mam Ekam Sharanam Braja, verse 1866 Bhagavad Gita. The goal of self-honesty is to be, remember our discussion with about japa, is to be in our relationship with Krishna, because that's, the self is not separate from Krishna. To think the self separate from Krishna, that's not self, that's illusion, it's maya, it's not so. So to be in our relationship with Krishna, to realize our relationship with Krishna, this verse spoken by Lord Vishnu to Brahma says, there must be some degree of faith, in proportionate to our faith that we exist as a spirit soul, that a relationship with Krishna exists, we can act within that relationship, there's a means to do so. Having faith in all of those things, proportionate to our faith, we're going to have realization of ourself. Go back to the refresh button, and we're not going to have self-honesty unless we have a spiritual conception of self. To have a spiritual conception of self, it's our relationship with Krishna. You don't have self-honesty otherwise. You have self-delusion. Even you're thinking you're being honest. Pursuing some ideal that's very lofty, and it's a true ideal, and that's me, and that's reality, and I'm being true to myself. It's illusion. Without the realization of our relationship with the personality of Godhead. So the message is proportionate to faith. So that statement is challenged by these three things. Our mind, or the involvement with, you know, interpersonal activities, like expectations that other people have of ourselves and expectations that we have of other people and our social interactions, and what to speak of the body and its pains and pleasures and so on. So here's what Bhaktisiddhanta is paraphrasing Brahma's doubt. He says, How will the preservation and conduct of worldly affairs be feasible if one continuously is engaged in the endeavor for the realization of bhakti? So if we're just on the self, that central circle of the Venn diagram, we're just there. How are we gonna, when we're doing these other things that we do, how are we gonna sustain that? Or the other way around, if we just do that, how are we going to sustain our life? Because our life has these other components. We're challenged. We have natural propensities because we have a body. We have to service them. We have a mind. We have to deal with it. And we have society around us, people, and we're social beings. We like having relationships with people. But when we start going into relationships with people, it starts to get complicated real fast. And then our mind starts to give us a problem. So, how do we stay, both statements, or both doubts, how do we stay fixed in self-honesty and self-realization and a relationship with Krishna when we're dealing with these other things? Then the other doubt that he says is, since the self is eternal and these other things are all temporary, how is dealing with these temporary things going to end up when the body is gone and the mind is gone and the relationships in society are gone? How are we going to have a spiritual result? My doubt. So in Brahma's case, I've got to create this universe. And I've got a problem. I'm going to think I'm going to create the universe. My ego is going to get in the way. You know, I did it, or I didn't do it so well, or all those ego issues surrounding my activity to fulfill a certain ideal. Each of us have our ideals. So, here's how it works good. Here's how Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur addresses this. He breaks down these three. Mankind live by threefold actions: body, mind, and words. So the bodily activities, such as, but not limited to, eating, seating, walking, resting, sleeping, cleansing, covering, etc. So we do those things. Then we also do some mental things. We think, we recall, there's impressions, or we retain those impressions. Sometimes we go and access them, a little photo file. We try to remember something that we had some impression of. We're becoming aware, present tense of things. there's feelings of pleasure and pain. So we got this, we're trying to be absorbed in the self. We've got this bodily thing going on, the mental thing going on, the social things going on. Marrying, practicing reciprocal relationships, brotherhood, attending meetings, offering oblations, digging wells, maintaining one's relations, practicing hospitality, observing proper civic conduct, and keeps going on. Showing due respect to others. And we've got to be attentive to all this stuff while we're maintaining a sense of we're not this body, we're not this mind, although we're doing bodily things and mental things and interpersonal things. So all those are going to interfere with being aware at all times of our real identity is not this body or spirit soul. It'll be in itself our spiritual conception of life. That's the problem that Brahma sees, and for practicing self-honesty we might also see. Like, you know, it's like balancing or spinning three different plates and we only have two hands. How do we do it? His solution, want the solution? You just should just stop with the problem. We got enough problems. He says, Lord Vishnu is saying, by meditation upon me, or so by meditation upon the Supreme Lord, Vishnu or Krishna, it's properly practiced when we basically, when we join our practice of proper chanting, our core devotional activities, starting with hearing, like we're doing now, chanting, like we did this morning, we're going to do a little bit more later. Hearing, chanting, remembering, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam. When we connect our sadhana bhakti with these other activities, then they become subsidiary activities. Or we learn how, when doing those activities, to look inward and connect with the self. So these other body, mind, and social are extensions of the covering of the soul, but the covering of the soul is not me. So I'm not identifying with, you know, my present circumstance. My present circumstance is whatever it is. I'm in this family, and I'm going to this school, and I'm doing these social things, and I'm working with my mind this way, my body that way, and my social things that way. That's not me. I'm dedicating these things, mindful of their expressions of service to Krishna, and that becomes possible because I'm doing my sadhana bhakti properly. Here's examples that he gives. So eating, seating, resting, sleeping, cleansing, covering, mental activities, thinking, recollection, retaining impressions, becoming aware. So each of these things can be done in relation to the personality of Godhead. Marrying, practicing reciprocal relationships, brotherhood, offering oblations, digging wells. Of course, we don't do too much of that. Maintaining one's relations, we could do more of that. Practicing hospitality, we definitely could do more of that. Observing civic conduct, we hardly have any civic awareness. So, joining those activities with bhakti. And now, going back to the theme message is from Lord Vishnu to Brahma and Bhaktisiddhanta to us, that is proportionate to the faith that we have, that is, you know, our conceptions are faithfully being carried into action. then we'll get realization of Krishna. And we have realization of Krishna, then Krishna thought is there. In the course of all, so these are all ways by which we can serve Krishna. We have a body, we have a mind, we have social activities and social obligations, and we do them as an offering of service to Krishna. We will think that way more, or we even have realization of Krishna through those activities more, if we do our basic sadhana in a carefully applied way. So now I'll very quickly attempt to connect that with the japa session that we had the other day. In some very simple essence message, the japa session was, when we're chanting, it's an expression of reestablishing our relationship with Krishna, a relationship that we broke, and Krishna didn't dismiss us because we broke our relationship with Krishna. Krishna's still in our heart. Krishna's still appearing before us in his holy name and as his representatives and so on, continuously inviting us to restore our relationship with him. So we take up chanting in that honest way. We're taking responsibility for what we chose to do and the circumstances that came as a result of that. Nonetheless, I want to restore my relationship with Krishna. So we do our chanting in that consciousness. I just have a question. Was anybody moved by that message in the course of the last couple of days, take up chanting in that manner, besides myself? A few. Could you share what that was like? Do you mind?
I was just, before it was more not interested or not thinking about that the purpose of chanting is to develop my relationship with Krishna. But like yesterday I was chanting and I was really trying hard to focus my mind and telling myself that I broke the relationship, it's my fault. So I have to do whatever I have to do just to reestablish that. So it was really powerful. I mean, obviously there were the ups and downs because I'm not chanting purely, but it helped me focus a lot more, and it helped me get a better purpose to chanting and doing my sadhana every day, and it helped me connect more with the holy name.
Okay. Thank you.
Another thing.
Can we turn the volume up a little bit?
Kind of like the same thing as me. I was like thinking like more about Krishna. I was more focused.
More focused. More about Krishna. Rather than just an activity, you were more present while chanting, yeah? Did you raise your hand? Would you like to share, or you're okay with that? Okay. Say it again louder. You're capable of being audible.
Before I wanted, I didn't do it like because I wanted to, I just did it because I had to.
Okay.
But now I do it because I want to do it a little bit, but not.
Okay. Did you have that experience specifically from chanting with that kind of a request of Krishna? Anyone from the men's side over here? Yes?
I felt a lot of... It didn't just end at my relationship with Krishna, but I also was recalling my relationship with devotees, how there are broken relationships as I was chanting. So that sort of came to the forefront. And then I was also very, very grateful. I was recalling the legends of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, where he's saying, Lord Chaitanya is saying that I've come to give you the holy name, take this medicine. So that was the mode of my chanting when I was trying to chant.
And how, what did it feel like?
It felt like I was chanting for the first time. I was like, well, this is how the holy name sounds like. It was like, again, reconnecting with the holy name.
My experience was feeling. It was not just chanting, but it was chanting with feeling. And it was a very focused feeling. It was a feeling of, just as the language I spoke before, but calling out, like a feeling of dependency. And it wasn't just performing, like a little bit like what Sweta said, not just doing because I have to do dutifully, but far more in a positive sense, with the relationship with Krishna is the focus, and calling out for that relationship with Krishna. And certainly the thought was, often my chanting is not with that clarity of purpose nor the feeling. And another experience was, I'm asking for Krishna to accept me, but I know very well that Krishna will accept me. So the problem is not, well, Krishna, will you accept me? It's, you know, how strong is my desire to be accepted? That wasn't discouraging at all. It was humbling. And that humbling wasn't discouraging either. I got carried by that calling to Krishna. And if that calling out to Krishna is this is where self-honesty comes from, and same with, you know, having a spiritual conception. If we all have emotions, and we all have, just like the verse 61, we have ideals, and to spiritualize those ideals, we have to have a spiritual conception of self. And that the essence of that is we're part of Krishna. We have an internal relation with Krishna, and it's covered. But chanting Krishna's holy name in a proper mood is really at the heart of our whole topic, self-honesty, of sustaining a spiritual conception while we're doing the things of life that we do, and really taking great care and attention while we're doing our chanting and our primary devotional activities, not just to, like, as one devotee put it, fix your day, but to, that way, spiritualize and become happy and successful at the things that you do. But the essence of it is your relationship with Krishna, just being present with Krishna in the form of His holy name. Makes this, the three human functions, possible. That way we can sustain self-honesty even in the midst of, you know, doing other things besides sitting down and chanting and reading scripture. We can be in a place of self-honesty. Here's an example of that. Something that I don't even know where it came from, but somebody said that they transcribed this from a lecture that I gave. And I read it and said, I said that. Wow. It was in the context. Somebody was, it was in Potomac, and I was asked to speak about balancing material and spiritual life, which is what this topic is. How to be in a place of a spiritual sense of self while doing things of the world. So my comment was not a question of balancing, like so much of this and so much of that, that it's a matter of spiritualizing your life, which comes from how you do your devotional practices. And when you do your devotional practices, from that spiritualizing of this, from the soul platform, it naturally radiates out, like the sun radiates throughout the universe, or at least our solar system, and light goes everywhere because the sun is shining. So if our Krishna consciousness is awake, if we're in resonance with the real self and not the false ego self, then we can do activities not in false ego. So here's, I just changed it from work to study. You know, so more what your current position is. So this is, we'll go back to our Venn diagram. There are things in relation to the mind. They'll call the mind as the study part of your work, although social is also in part of the study part of your life because you're with other students and so on. If you have a clear focus of the spiritual purpose of life and are conducting your studies in line with that purpose, then your motivation in studying is simply to please Krishna by your efforts. From that follows the effort to be regulated, focused, and responsible, to not waste time in idle distractions, etc., because you're fixed on pleasing Krishna through the dutiful execution of your prescribed work. And for some period of time, it's called studying. Rather than focusing too much on your own abilities or inabilities, when you actively keep Krishna in the center, depending on him for strength and striving your best with that strength, then there's no room for either slackness nor for the tendency to prove oneself, outdo others, etc. This spills over a little bit into the peer association, that topic about competition, that our material society is so abundantly swamped with. Here's another little chart that addresses this in a similar but somewhat different way. The concentric circle, or a holistic picture of life. The self's at the center, and we'll assume, I mentioned this 2 days ago, assume that at the center of self is the super soul, because the soul is never separated from super soul. But to keep it simple for chart purposes, self means self and super soul. So that's on a spiritual plane, that's who we are. And then we're guided by persons who are helping us stay with those Venn diagram things, keeping our activities of life centered on self-realization, guiding us to Krishna. And then our immediate family and our closest friends. And then the circle widens. The others who are in the categories of also friends and extended family and society and the world, universe. So staying in resonance with the self, I can take care of what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati is calling the necessities of life, dealing with the fact that we have a body, dealing with the fact that we have a mind, dealing with the fact that we have relations, we have social interactions, we're social beings. How to keep all those things in a proper place, in proper balance, is staying fixed upon the proper conception of self. So that's nurtured by hearing, it's nurtured by all these other, if done properly. The concentric circles are not taking us away, but they are what they are. They're concentric circles around this real identity of self. And we just do them in a proper manner, in a properly guided manner, with careful hearing and chanting, careful sadhana. And progressively, as our faith grows, then our realization of Krishna at every moment will also grow. So there's a little map, visual rendering of how to stay in a position of self-honesty and even how to grow in a deeper in a position of self-honesty while doing all the things that aren't what we're doing right now, sitting and contemplating spiritual reality and then, you know, going upstairs and doing your social thing where that's just forgotten. And then going off to school and it's a whole other kind of forgetfulness. How to stay fixed. I finished a little early. So let's see if there's any thoughts on this. Oh, I just remembered one other thing I wanted to bring up. In relation to what Krishna Smarana, when he presented peer relationships, and he mentioned, because I asked him to mention, because he had shared it with me, that he was not so keen, like fired up, about the way that the buddy system has been set up. So I did a little, not comprehensive, but a little polling of how some of you feel all of that's going. This is in this confidential friends circle there. And the response that I got was mixed and, you know, there's some places where it's just naturally happening without a structure, and then others that, you know, there's unclarity about structure, what does it mean, and do I have the time, and so on and so on. So I thought I would at this point present the idea, the thought, that as it was done for a period of time, buddy system, and it was like an experiment, I would like to like press the pause button and then maybe after that the delete button and say what would probably be better is to take the message that Krishna Smarana gave about peer relationships and just in a general way, in a position of just doing it because it should be done, just do it, just, you know, exercise the principles that Krishna Smarana gave in terms of working with peers, and, you know, spiritualizing the relationships that you have with your peers in principle without a formal structure. Two other little comments. Jagatananda is going to take you through an exercise. You didn't do it yet, right? About an exercise kind of taking, blending something from what I just presented, something from what Krishna Smarana presented, and doing it in the form of an exercise of recognizing a quality or a recognizing a quality in another devotee and expressing it, and then perhaps going out through the new year in a mood of service, how to support that nice quality that you appreciate in another devotee. And just as an example of acting on the platform of a wholesome Krishna conscious way of having peer relationships, because it's so important to do it, to have peer relationships and to do it in a wholesome way. Take away the structure of the buddy system. And the other point is, with the exception, I was thinking, with the exception of the devotees that, at my request, there are some devotees that are in faraway places. Not so far away, like St. Louis is not so far away, but where there's devotees that are from different places, from our Chicago group of devotees. And I'll identify those persons and set up some, you know, somebody in Seattle and somebody in Houston and somebody in Florida and somebody in Virginia and a couple somebodies in St. Louis. I'll set up that system of, you know, communicating on a regular basis and so on. And otherwise, the local devotees here in this Soul Connection group and the youth of Chicago just practice, act on the messages that you've heard, supported by strong sadhana and spiritual guides who work with you on that. That's a related thought. Maybe it's not the proper place to insert this thought process, but there was some time, so I put it in there. Any thoughts on what you did this morning before I got here, and anything on this, or any sharing you'd like to do? Yes?
I was thinking, like, when we are performing or participating in kirtan,
yeah,
should we have the same goal of mending our relationship with Krishna? Because I was thinking, like, there's different moods of kirtan as well.
Yes, there are. What's your thought about it?
Well, I was thinking, yeah, I mean, especially in, like, the meditative kind of kirtan, I definitely feel like we're trying to reach for Krishna, but in, like, joyous and, like, ecstatic kirtan, I'm just trying, at least what's going in my mind, is just trying to please Krishna.
It's celebration.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's definitely different moods in kirtan. There's definitely different moods in japa also, but with perhaps that can be a starting point, certainly in japa, and I don't see, you know, kirtan generally doesn't start in a frenzy, it starts meditative. And then when there's some, you get a sense of you're connecting with the holy name and you're connecting with the devotees who are calling the holy name, it starts to become a festival instead of, as you say, joyous, a celebration of how wonderful is Krishna's name. But in the beginning, when it's more meditative, start with it, because it's the mood is a humble mood, a penitent mood. I'm feeling responsible for my misdeeds. Bhaktivinoda Thakur teaches that in itself is purification for a Vaishnava, so starting in that place, and going deeply into that mood, the more you... One of the things that I can share is by going deeply and more deeply and more deeply and more deeply into a mood of dependence upon Krishna and calling out to Krishna, the more you go down that path, the easier it is to go down that path. And you're in that place when chanting, and then it's, you know, it's the spiritual world. And when you're in the spiritual world, anything can happen. And starts to happen. Like Badahari's expression, I shared this the other night, that in the beginning of his 64, the beginning of the festival of the holy name, that Nama Yagya we had in the temple room, he said afterwards to me, in the beginning, I wasn't present. But although he was calling to Lord Nityananda, he felt that the Sangha of the devotees carried him to the holy name. And then it just went to the ceiling. And out, the, you know, it was just explosive. But starting from that point of the humble petition, it it seems appropriate. And then you're in the, you know, enter into the spiritual world, qualified to be with Krishna. And let Krishna do with the kirtan what Krishna wants to do with the kirtan. And the mood of the devotees, reciprocating with the mood of the devotees. Something else? Yes?
Yesterday's 11 points. I wasn't sure where those from.
Where? What's the question?
Where were those from?
Which one?
You said there were 11 points you were going
to
speak about.
I didn't send them out.
Oh, you
did? I was supposed to send them out. I have it on a little data stick, and I can send it. I'll send it to you and Rajiv, and you can circulate it around. I'll do it as soon as we're done with this, and you're off snacking. I'll do it. It was more my reflections than it was like something from scripture, but as it came out, I put it down and then organized it. His thoughts on chanting. Okay. Well, it's snack time then. So, 7 after 12. Can we reassemble at 12:30? So you'll take 12:30 to 1:30 and approximately an hour to the rest. They made a big lunch. Lunch is at 2:30, so don't snack too much. Thank you. Prabhupada ki jai.